heroes walk among us. They are in our midst every day. At Heroes in Our Midst, we find them, we celebrate them, and we learn from them. Heroes in Our Midst is a podcast about the power inside the heart, the human behind the story, and the collection of idiosyncrasies that both make us unique and bond us together through a common humanity. Join us as we are inspired, as we learn, and as we are challenged to be better by the heroes in our midst and the stories that they tell.
So excited about this episode of Heroes in Our Midst. A good friend of mine and an incredible, incredible athlete for Canada in her day, but still a hero in our midst. And I can say that because the same as me. It's so long ago, really, that Joanne Mooks, but now Vergara, swam for our country at the Paralympic Games and did amazing things. So we're going to get her story because she is living in our midst. She's a mom, and I just love that life goes on and we can learn from all those things. So Joanne, thank you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure, Michelle. Thank you for having me.
It's kind of like a reunion for us, I think.
It's always fun to get together with you at different events, and it's like the story continues.
Yep. It absolutely does. So we're going to get that story from you, Joanne. And let's go back to the beginning. Now, Paralympic swimmer, those who weren't watching you in your day will wonder what makes her a Paralympian. How did that start when you were a kid? Bring us back to the beginning.
I always had a joy of swimming from day one. I think from age three, I got into the water and it was just my thing.
Yeah.
I joined a swim team with my best friend. It was like bring a friend to swim night. They were trying to promote the club, get more people involved and signed up. Went with my best friend back in 1982. We joined the swim team and it was like history ever since. It just, you know, as a child, you try so many different sports, so many different activities, musical instruments. Where is your little niche? And as soon as I got into competitive swimming, I found a new section of me that I didn't realize. I awoke the competitiveness that I guess was always there. Being the youngest with three siblings, always competitive. And then I had a way to channel it into now a sport that I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
So I was swimming from basically 9 until 20 or so.
Wow.
With the swim team and then through university, and had a lot of opportunities for different types of competitions at different levels.
Yeah. So Joanne, can I ask what qualifies you for the Paralympics is?
I'm an amputee swimmer. There's different abilities, physical abilities that the Paralympics can encompass. Mm-hmm. They recognize different obstacles or challenges that you have physically. For mine, it was an amputee. When I first started swimming, we were more categorized as these are amputee swimmers, these are wheelchair athletes, these are blind athletes. Paralympics is now incorporating it more as a point scale for abilities, because the big thing is in those types of competitions, you're trying to find a level competition field.
Right.
You know, as athletes, we're always integrated, which is fantastic. At a competition level, it's nice to sort of level the playing field a little bit more to really get a sense of where you are at in your own abilities. So through that point system in the Paralympics, that allows that to happen. So as a bilateral amputee, I started swimming at amputee competitions, which eventually evolved to more like encompassing all disabilities, which is what the Paralympics are. I should say, just to clarify, so I'm a bilateral below-the-knee amputee.
Right.
I have two stumps below the knees.
Yeah. Well, incredible. I think for some people, I mean, people who don't experience that, the first reaction is, oh, how do you swim? Unbelievable upper body strength, I'm thinking. And tell us about that, though. Like, you know, your training and all of that. I mean, and you said you swam since you were three. Has it always been like that for you?
You know what? I'm really thankful that my parents let me do things, whatever I wanted to do, and just raised me as an able-bodied kid, regardless of some of the stares or questions that we would get along the way. But to be at three and being at the public pool a very normal thing for me, I got really adapted to the fact that I loved swimming, and I had to sort of like ignore some of the looks or accept some of the questions because it was something that I found out I really loved doing.
Yeah.
And swimming wound up being the sport for me, I think, because of my disability with the legs, because it made other sports a lot more challenging running, jumping, balance, not necessarily my forte, but it, like you said, in the water, my upper body strength could compensate for what I was lacking then with my legs. And so there was different adaptations that we had to figure out with things like, you know, diving off of diving blocks.
Oh, yeah.
I know I would lose a lot of distance on turns compared to able-bodied athletes. But, you know, what I'd lose on the dive, lose on the turns, that's what you make up for with the rest of the length, right?
Yeah, I never even thought about those two things, the mm-hmm. turn and the end coming off the blocks. Wow. Okay, so what do you think? Now, at the end of the story, I mean, we can know from reading your bio and from reading your story, we can see, I mean, I've seen a picture of you with five medals, five gold Paralympic medals, best in the world, not only once or twice, but like... So, we're going to now go back. I mean, that's the end result, so people know. But were you better than others early in your life?
Better than others? No. In a sport like swimming, it's an individual sport in a lot of aspects. You're really competing against yourself with your best time, as well as competing against others. So, for me, it was always a competition against myself, yeah. right? Every race you do, you're looking at best times. You're getting frustrated when you're peaking. You're putting more effort into the training. You're working on your own technique. It is a lot of individual goals that you have. So, at the end of the day, I was competing with myself the most. And then I had the opportunities of different types of competitions to see where I fared across the rest. Mm-hmm. And of course, that motivated me as well. And so competing against able-bodied athletes, I was right in there like everybody else. So I was there was no I'm way behind or anything. It was very fair competition, which I loved. And then when I got the opportunity to start competing against other disabled athletes, that's when then I started really gaining a lot of recognition, because then when you put me in that more fair level playing field, that's where it was proving myself to actually be a great swimmer.
Yeah. So you did a lot of swimming against able-bodied. Was that the majority in Manitoba or in your training that you did? I mean, you talked about going through university. Maybe talk about the university days and how you trained and how that looked.
Look, from day one, I always swam with an able-bodied team and had an able coach who coached the entire team. And I was just fully integrated all the time. So the swim season was historically like a school season from September to June. And then I swam all of that until graduating from grade 12, at which time then I went, like I said, I swam within the University of Manitoba Bisons. And, you know, even there, I qualified for CIAU's an event. I got to compete there. Like, it was always the goals you had with that season, and then the disabled competitions, Paralympic competitions, tended to be in the July, August months. So I wound up training all year without a break and really had to look at when I was peaking, because what competitions meant the most to me. Was it something like a CIAU's with the university, or was it like an international competition that was hitting in August? So I was trying to manage both, and it was really just setting up my own priorities.
Yeah. Was there a time even up to this point where you were obviously having success and doing really well, but you were training so hard? Swimming, I mean, we've chatted with some swimmers already on this podcast, and it's early mornings and it's hours and hours, and you're in the water and you have a coach pushing you. Was it always fun for you? Was there times where you were like, you know, I'm glad I'm good at this, but I'm not sure how far I want to go?
You know, isn't it funny? It's something I always say that I actually didn't even consciously think about or debate, especially I think maybe because my season just sort of always continued at some level. Yeah. I never really took much of a break ever, so I never really analyzed that. Like, it was just sort of my life. You know, a lot of people, they get up in the morning, they throw a gym bag into the car, and they're going to the gym. They don't debate about it because they're just going to make it part of their routine.
Yeah.
And I think that's how it was for me for the longest time. Once I hit university, and obviously there's new stresses and pressures of schooling, of what you're going to do in your career, of just being older, getting part-time work, all those different things that are now coming at you. I was already starting to peak with some of my goals. I had done a fantastic job in the 1988 Paralympics. I knew I wasn't done then. I had refocused myself immediately to the 1992 Paralympics. And then it was after that, and then there, where I'm talking about age of 20, I had a fantastic swim meet. I accomplished more than I had even intended to. So I had a really high with it. And that was, I think, the one time when I started to now reevaluate where I was at in my life and where I was at with my training and what my goals were going to be. And at that point, that's when I started reevaluating whether I was now at a point of retirement or whether I was going to continue on. I was very excited to know that Canada was hosting the Commonwealth Games in our country in 1994. They were doing exhibition events, and I was very excited to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, was I as motivated to hang on for an event such as that, or was it time to let go on my own terms?
Yeah, we're going to get that answer yet. But I want you to take us to your first Paralympics. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. How did you qualify? And what was that like? What was that moment like to realize an Olympic dream?
So 1988 was the Paralympics. They were held in Seoul, Korea. So just Paralympics is like parallel to the Olympics. It just yeah. followed the Olympics. So it's the same athlete village, same facilities. It was an amazing, amazing experience. You know, I was part of the evolution, I think, a little bit of the Paralympics yeah. as it grew. So for sure, along the way from when I first started competing till right up till when my last competition internationally was 92, I saw huge changes wow. in just the whole setup of it, the running of it, the actual competition level, the participation of the different countries, right? It grew. And it was nice to be a part of that, to see it growing. And so every year that we competed, it got more and more exciting because yeah. it was also getting more and more challenging. And it was getting more and more recognized, which sure. was a lot of fun too. So 88, Seoul, Korea, it's like I'm 16 years old. It blows your mind, right? You're a part of Team Canada. You're staying at the Olympic Village. Just such an overwhelming sensation of pride for your country, pride in yourself for the hard work you did to get there, and now the pressure to perform.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about your results there and what was the racing like? And were there athletes in the Paralympic world that you were gunning for or were gunning for you that you always knew were was your main competition?
Yeah, for sure that happened, which is like half the fun.
Yeah.
So in 88, I wound up finishing the competition with one gold medal, which was amazing. It was my best, the event I wanted to do so great in, so that was fantastic. One silver medal and one bronze medal. So it was really nice. I always make jokes that I came home with my little Olympic set.
Yeah.
You know, there was always all this teasing that was just something you could buy off the streets because it was one of each. But no, I earned those. So that was a great experience. And yeah, that was a time that I think people started to take notice to me, mm-hmm. as well as I got to get a good sense of who some of the girls were I had to watch out for. Mm-hmm. And it was great because then from that point on, for those next 4 years, because like I said, right away, there was a new focus towards 92. For those next 4 years, any kind of competition, for sure, there was a few girls that, one from Germany, one from Netherlands that I remember, you know, it always seemed to be a struggle between the three of us of how the colors were going to come out at the end of
yeah.
the day. So they were the girls that I would even keep in my mind during hard training sets, you know, where you're getting exhausted in the middle of a set and you're like, oh, am I going to be able to, where do you find the reserves?
Yeah.
I would just think that they were also at the pool in Germany or at the pool in Netherlands, mm-hmm. and they were doing the set. So, you know, what are you going to do, Joanna? So, you know, it's another motivator. Like yeah. I said, now suddenly I had actual girls to be focusing on or visualizing when I was training. And yeah, and we re-met each other at every competition.
Incredible. Yeah, for sure. And for the next 4 years, you guys are battling it out.
Yeah.
So from 88 to 92, you're already a Paralympic medalist. Mm-hmm. You have these girls to battle against. And what was your, you know, what kept you motivated through those 4 years? And what were those 4 years of training like for you?
They were probably the most obviously focused and intense training years of my career, obviously, because now I am getting older, the training increases, mm-hmm. the workouts are increasing, your commitment level is increasing. It's now serious. Like you're now defining yourself as an athlete, as a swimmer, and this is what you do.
Right.
The rest of the stuff all comes sort of secondary. Grades always have to stay up, so maybe not quite secondary, but you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
you really are not to worry too much about your social life outside of the pool. Your friends are your teammates. You know, it's a focus of your whole lifestyle is going towards this. But that's what you do. And that's because that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a hardship because, you know, your friends are your teammates. The workouts are giving you the satisfaction and you know what needs to be done to get where you want to go. And I was very determined those 4 years about what that ultimate goal was. And it's not happening overnight. You got to realize the baby steps. You have to set your goals along the way so that you can maintain that to get there, and just pray that it all goes together the way it's supposed to. You know, with coaching, there's always coaching issues or coaching changes, you know, injuries, things like that along the way. I was pretty fortunate myself that I didn't have a lot of that, but the training for the whole season with the one team and then the training on my own during the summer was starting to get a lot more challenging.
Yeah, yeah, I bet. And were you starting to feel, you hear about this with a lot of Olympians and especially Olympians that are medal winners, it's sort of something we'd all like, and yet would we really all like the pressure of being an Olympic or a Paralympic medalist and then heading to another? There's a different concept there. When you're 16, going to your first Olympics, you winning those medals, I know you expected them, you trained for them, you knew what level you were at. But now, was there more pressure on you? Did you feel that? Or, like, continuing on, did you just continue on in your amazing Joanne way? It's kind of unique. You did very little reflection that way. You just knew, every day I'm going to the pool and I'm trying to get better.
Yeah, well, that's where I go back to what I was saying about it being also a very much individual goal setting, about competing against yourself, about your own best times and whatnot. Yeah. So as you get older, you for sure peak. And so that was the frustrating part probably in those 4 years, when you know you have a bigger goal down the way. And why have I plateaued here? And what am I supposed to do? And struggling with that. That was probably the bigger challenges to overcome, is to not get too down on that and to know that, no, we'll get there and just stick with it and, you know, try to stay motivated through some of those times.
Mm-hmm. And trust those that are training you.
And trust those that are training you. You know what, though? Aside from the coaches, and it's important to have a good relationship with your coach, there's so much, like you said, trust involved in that, because there's so much pushing that has to come on from the coach that you just have to release yourself to and go with it. You know, some workouts for sure are fully driven by how angry you are at the coach, you know, show you. On the other hand, it's also teammates, right? Which I found training with the club during the year a lot easier than training in the summer when I was more on my own, because your teammates push you. You know, you have all your own little mini sets, mini goals. Like I said, it's baby steps, right? Yeah. So you boil it right down to a set that you've been given. And I'm, you know, starting off at the same time as, you know, my friend in the next lane. And so now we're going to have a little mini competition going on in this little set on its own, right? So so teammates are a big part of that too, like where you have that good enough camaraderie, good enough relationship where you can motivate and push each other, boil it right down to a single set on a single day in a single workout, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's cool. And I think we see the big moments of the gold medals, but it's those little moments in the pool where really gold medalists are made. Because really, does it matter? Does it really matter that you beat her? To you, it really mattered. And did it matter to anyone else? Probably not. You were in this pool in Manitoba and who knows what day, no cameras, no reporters. But you wanted to win that little set. I love that stuff. I think kids need to hear that. I think adults need to hear that in our daily lives, no matter how small we think it is. It's a big deal. Mm. Joanne, 92 came. My goodness, like you said, it exceeded your expectations. 5 Paralympic gold medals. You have to tell us what that was like, because there are such few people in this world that have accomplished an accomplishment like that. That's amazing. What was that like? What was that games like for you?
You know, it seems surreal. Like, honestly, it does. It was such an amazing competition from the start till the end. Just an emotional roller coaster the whole time. Being in Barcelona was beautiful. Being a part of the whole setup that they had there, again, with the Olympic Village and the facilities, was just spectacular. Again, it was an elevated competition from anything I had experienced before in terms of even the security, the crowds, the fans. So fantastic. Like, it was just mind-blowing. And a lot of athletes struggled with that, because it was a whole new level of pressure, like you said, where you could be intimidated very quickly. It was, you had to take it again, race by race.
Yeah.
You know, one at a time.
Yep.
Right. Of course I had my own favorites that I really wanted to do. And I had, certain ones, like I mentioned, certain competitors I really wanted to beat. But it really boiled down to one race at a time. And then there's heats in the morning and there's finals at night, and you just had to get through it day by day. But of course, I was very focused, as wonderful as an experience it is to be a part of all of it. And as much as you're trying to soak in all the greatness of being there is, you're there for a reason and you're staying focused on that reason. And so it was really honing down to my own health and readiness. Yeah. For each of the competitions, because that was a lot of events for one competition, and like one by one, it just kept going amazing.
Now 92,
yeah,
like we won't do the math, but it was a long time ago. Do you have?
Thanks for not doing
you're
math.
Welcome. No, we won't do math. But just remember, I will share in this joy of ours that it was so long ago that we competed. But do you have memories of each race? Do you? Can you feel the water still? Can you feel those races?
You know, one of the things that I remember the most is people listening remember, like, listening to interviews with Alex Bauman or swimmers like that, but a lot of this, or even Mark Tewksbury, I think it was Mark Tewksbury, always talked about the story about, like, a hot box. Swimmers call it the hot box. Before you go into a race, you get organized. The committee organizes the swimmers before each heat, and at a bigger competition like that, it's actually a separate room, and we refer to it as the hot box, and they're just organizing the eight swimmers in the eight lanes into one room to make sure they're all lined up and ready to go, and they're marshaled for the next event, and you just get progressively out to the pool. And that, I always said, was a lot of races were won and lost in that very room, because now you're sitting in a room with the seven other competitors you're about to race against, and there's a lot of mind games going on in that room.
Totally.
And everybody had their own mechanisms for dealing with that stress. And that's what I remember a lot. I remember always the games that we would play in that room and how we would manage that. And a lot, it was a lot like, okay, now I am dating myself, because I'm like, listening to my Walkman. But listening to music, obviously, was a big part of dealing with that space and getting focused on the races. But then having to put all that equipment down and then walking out into the deck, which is now you've like now you're opened up to the giant crowds and the noise and the music and everything, getting marshaled to your lane and the announcement and the countries and the screaming and the, you know, all of that. I do remember all of that anticipation and then the quietness of getting on the blocks before the guns going off, and then it's just sploosh and all you hear is then water. And at that point, it's literally the race and what you can pick up in your peripheral vision of your competitors. But again, you're racing the clock ultimately, right?
Yeah.
So it's really just huge focus on technique and strength and what you can ask of your body in that moment.
Right. Yeah, and really what you can control is what's in your lane, and that's you. Amazing. Incredible. So you win all these gold medals. Did life change for you after that, Joanne? You know, five Paralympic medals. What was life like after 1992 for you?
Well, we were starting to get more recognition. Mm-hmm. Having an accomplishment like that did raise more awareness. And totally. I did get a lot of attention. I was starting to win more awards or get different accolades and recognitions from other organizations and such, you know, even Government of Canada, you know, there was just a lot more of that. So we were in opportunities where we did more public speaking, where there was more banquet opportunities, keynote speakers, interviews, you know, different types of advertisement covers or for different things like Drug-Free Sport or Speedo Canada, things like that. So that was totally not in the realm of my life before that. But it was amazing. It was great because really the swim meet came and went. I accomplished everything I had set out to do. So there's such a sensation of satisfaction with that. Mm-hmm. But it was wonderful that all those things continued to happen, because then I got to stay with those amazing feelings a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't need recognition at all. I never felt that that's what I was out there for at all. I was happy that I was a part of maybe awareness.
Yeah.
But the recognition was never something that I was striving for, but it was wonderful to receive.
Mm-hmm. A while ago in our story here, you said 92, you were thinking, do I continue to the Commonwealth Games in 94 here at home, you know, in Canada, or do I not? So what did you do?
I wound up actually stopping swimming.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just at the point in my life where, you know what, I would go into the water, I would go to the workouts, but it just was not quite the same. Mm-hmm. Like I was really at the point where I was like, now determining about more of a balanced life and what else do I want out of life? And really, what am I still asking from myself in my swimming career? Because, mm-hmm. I shattered any kind of goal I had set for myself. And it's really nice as an athlete to be able to sort of close the chapter on it on your own terms.
Yeah.
And I was struggling because things were so great and I was doing so well that I'm like, why would I ever close this chapter? But, you know, like, it's life. And, you know, I'm now in my 20s and there's other things that I want to refocus my energies on, reset goals on. And I thought it was just a nice time to maybe, as wonderful as it would be to compete at that level in my own country, I think it was the best time for me to maybe refocus myself on some new goals.
Yeah. So, I mean, and how great to finish on top. I mean, you hear every different story in the book when it comes to athletes,
right,
and those decisions, and some really don't work out and some are different than that. And they might not finish with the gold medals, but it's an okay thing because they needed to continue on and those kind of things. Okay. So where are those medals now?
Oh, okay, so that's funny. No, we have, you know, there's been a lot of medals along the way.
Yeah.
And certificates and whatnot.
No kidding.
For me, the big thing in our home is like, really, at the end of the day, let's just boil down. If you looked at everything that you've gained, what means the most to you? And those 5 medals in Barcelona probably speak the most to what my swim career was all about.
Yeah.
So I don't have much out at all. But those, I put the 5 medals, we got them framed, it's up on a wall. It's very subtle.
Yep.
You know, I know what it's all about. It gives me a nice sense of, it gives me a nice feeling when I walk by
for sure.
It.
Yep.
It's not highlighted with a light or on display. It's just there, you know, but it's my one thing that I'm bringing to our home.
Mm.
And it's nice for the kids to see as well. I think it's just a piece of my history.
Totally it is.
Yeah.
And you can share that with your family now, who I'm sure, I mean, you know, when your family comes into the picture, they love you so much. They want to know those things and they want to live those moments with you, even if they weren't there at the time. Tell us about your life now, Joanne. Tell us about your kids. And you say you have kids. A lot of people want to know, are they swimmers? What do they do? Of course, you're married to Hector Vergara, the big soccer referee. He's another one of our guests in the podcast series. And what incredible international soccer ref. He's accomplished everything in the world you can imagine in that field. You accomplished everything you can imagine in your field. What's life like in your home? I mean, some serious accomplishments behind you. And now kind of normal life in Sue's. What's it like?
Yeah, well, it really does feel like 2 very distinct aspects of my life. I like the swimmer Joanne is like so far behind in my past, it seems at times, because I'm so overwhelmed with what my life is today. And everybody who has family can appreciate the chaos that includes. And, you know, it's the husband who works hard and travels lots. It's 3 kids who are growing and finding their own passions that, of course, I'm going to be fully supportive of. It is very interesting how it worked out as raising these kids. We were, again, you know, pick your 2 sports. Every time there was a registration for something, try it all, see what you like.
Yeah.
You know, sports is very important to both my husband and I. So, of course, we gave a lot of encouragement for them to try different things and find out where is your own skill, where is your own passion. And it's just awesome that it worked out that my daughter is really enjoying swimming and she's a competitive swimmer, and our 2 sons are really gravitating towards soccer. So, so So we have a little bit to say on both sports so that we can contribute as mom and dad.
Yeah.
But it's sports that obviously we've always loved. And so it's great to still now be involved in them in a whole new way. And that's as like soccer mom or, you know, soccer dad and at the swimming pool, time in at the swim meets.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Joanne, I know this from personal experience. And when you play a certain sport, people ask you, you know, oh, aren't you glad? Now, do you see that they are they going to do what you did? I know as a parent, that doesn't matter to us, really. We've already done what we've done, and they can do what they are going to do. Really, I know it doesn't matter. So I know the answer to that question. But do you see some gifting in your kids that maybe will bring them to those kind of levels?
Again, it's exactly what you just said. You nailed it. It's 100% true. There's no pressure on that kids. They have to be their own people, do their own things. We're going to support them, whatever. It's got to be enjoyable for them. It's never going to be a chore for them. So we have to just support them as they find out who they are themselves. But you know what? They're really dedicated and they're really committed to their sports. And I think that's just happening naturally on their own. So, you know, it's something that we can relate to and support them in without trying to be too pushy about it. But it's wonderful, right, to see them excelling and going with the highs and lows of it all, for sure. And they're all at different stages and different ages. So it's also interesting to see where it's going to go.
So you get married and you move on in your life and you get married. And a lot of your married life and a lot of your time with your husband has been in a supporting role, right? You being at home, him traveling the world, pursuing his dreams. Some might think that's tough for someone who is also a very strong individual who has accomplished the world in her sport. That also makes a lot of sense for what we're doing here in this podcast. We want to talk about heroes in our midst and moms and people at home or dads that stay at home and whatever, however that plays out in our lives. I know you really are a hero too. Your husband in the support role. How do you think you were good with that? How did you make that good?
Well, I guess it's like you said, it's the refocusing of your goals. You know, I had a dream of what I wanted my family to be, what it wanted to look like. I had the emotional feeling of knowing what it's like to reach certain successes and accomplishments. And so, of course, with the people you love, it's not much of a chore to be supportive. You know, not trying to make it sound too flowery at all. There is for sure ups and downs with that and hardships with that. But again, it's like focusing on what the ultimate goal is there. It's always been important that we build a strong family, an open family, one that communicates each other's goals and that we are the soft place to fall with each other. You know, home is really the best place where you're going to get your honesty and your support. And, you know, again, ups and downs with all of that. I'm happy to be in the role of supporting those I love because they support me now in other ways too.
Yeah, I love that. There's strength in that. And I think that's what we need to hear, that support. And I love, because every time you talk about doing something, you talk about, I just had to refocus my goals. And these are my goals now. You're doing all you can to be the best you can be at those goals. And I think that brings heroism to everything in life. It doesn't have to be the Olympics or the Paralympics or, you know, some big world thing. So thank you for bringing that to us. I think that's really, really important. We're really excited about all that you've done and all that you're doing. And I have some fun rapid fire questions for you, for us to get to know you even a little bit better. Joanne, what is your favorite sound?
I have two, I think. One is that it's just the sound of peace first thing in the morning. I just love opening up the windows or getting outside in the backyard first thing with a cup of coffee before the day gets bananas. I just love that sound of peace where it's just the birds and the wind and, you know, the quietness, the calmness. Because the other sound I love is almost the exact opposite. And that's my house is chaos and it's busy, but it's a loving, happy household for the most part. So it's like the kids laughing and joking around and screaming and singing or whatever. I love that high level of energy as well. So it's sort of a combination, both opposite.
Joanne, so we can get a picture. I'm curious, and I didn't remember to ask this, but how old are your kids?
Right now we are at 13, 15, and 17.
Describe an ordinary moment.
You know what? This is funny too, right? Because an ordinary moment before COVID came around is very different, right, from what an ordinary moment is now. I would say an ordinary moment before March hit would have been chaos getting organized, because it's a house that was always in motion. I always felt, you know, you're like have those little plates spinning on the poles and you just got to keep everything spinning. It was always getting organized of whose schedule, where are we going, what do you need, what laundry has to be done, who's getting what food where, and you know, that kind of chaos. Mm-hmm. That was for sure a glimpse in any time of any day, every day. Now I would say a moment like that in time is very different. Things have really calmed down a lot, and it's a lot more quiet time with the family, but still like games and laughter and dinners together.
Yeah.
You know, very different, but both fantastic.
Awesome. What is one piece of advice you want to pass along to others?
I think as I get older, I really worry a lot less about what others think. But for sure, growing up, that seemed to be a bigger thing in your mind. I don't think people are ever putting as much effort thinking about you as you think they are. So if you could just calm down on that and just worry about what makes you happy, what you want out of life, what you can give to others, you know, just be more focused on yourself rather than doing things because of what you're concerned other people might be thinking.
What is a quote you love?
I don't know if it's a quote as much as it is a slogan, but it's kind of one I lived by throughout my swimming career. I saw an ad once and I tore it out of the magazine and I kept it up on my wall and in my locker when I'd go to a swim competition.
Cool.
And it was so simple, and it was just go hard or go home. And I loved how it just boiled down, like, let's not beat around the bush on this. Like, it's really that simple. Go hard or go home.
What are a few songs you love?
You know what? I always love songs that are actually like light and carefree and make me want to dance. I love songs that are emotional. They make me happy. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I always liked like Desire by U2. It always wanted to make me dance. When I was swimming, I was talking earlier about being like in the hot box where there was like major stress. I would listen to the goofiest songs. It was usually like Enid by Bare Naked Ladies. Just something ridiculous just to keep, that's how I dealt with it, was just taking the edge off and just staying light and high energy and fun, you know. So it's usually in our house as well, being married to Hector, there's a lot of Latin music or salsa or things like that. So again, music to dance to, right?
Who are two or three people who influenced you and how did they impact your life?
Probably if we're focusing on my swimming career, for sure. Actually, everything in life. I mean, obviously, my family, my parents, for sure. I mentioned earlier being born as an amputee. I feel very lucky that I had brothers and a sister and parents who really just did not focus on that part at all. I was just Joanne from day one. And being the fourth kid in the household, you know, I just did what everybody else was doing and just tried to keep up with everybody else. My brothers were also into a lot of sports. My sister was more into dance. And so I did sports and I did dance and my parents supported all of it. And I think I really found my true self by them just letting me be me and not putting any kind of restrictions on that whatsoever.
Can I ask you one more question that I wasn't planning on asking you? But speaking of, when you talked about 88 to 92, how much better the Paralympic movement got and the respect and the of just the whole games in general. How do you think the Paralympics is now in 2020? And where do you see the future of it? What do you think of it? You know, in looking, because, I mean, you are the perfect person to ask because you were in it and you've seen it. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, maybe that one's a little bit tougher for me to respond because I haven't been quite as involved in it as I used to be. But I had to take encouragement that all the lines of focus were on integration.
Yeah.
And that it was a lot less segregation with regards to these different things. And the acceptance of general society has made a big impact. So I've always been one who kind of cringes about the separation of any of these things. Mm-hmm. I loved earlier that you said Paralympics, Olympics, whatever.
Yeah.
That's where I would love to see it go. I mean, a lot of it comes down to sponsorship and money, of course. So perhaps it's not quite there yet, mm-hmm. has still quite a ways to go. But, you know, that's the challenges of the athletes themselves, to just get out there and show what it is to appreciate their desire, their passion, and the strength that it requires to overcome obstacles while also trying to strive for such goals in competition.
Yeah, fantastic. When you hang out with heroes, you know, it sure makes you feel good. And so this has been a complete joy to hear your story. I appreciate that for you. You say your story is back there, so it doesn't define you, you know, now. And yet, it is such a part of who you are, but such a positive part.
Yes, that's for sure. It's true. Like, I feel like I compartmentalize things a lot of times, but honestly, you are who you are in your soul and in your core. And of course, my whole experiences with competition have led to how I applied myself to other areas of my life as I moved on. And I owe a lot to sport, 100%. Sport is so important to me. And that's why I've been trying to instill that now in my kids as well. You learn so many fantastic traits and abilities that, and meet so many great people that, you know, it's something that I for sure am always glad that I was a part of. And it is an important part of who I am.
Joanne Vergara, a hero in our midst. Thanks for joining our podcast. We love
that
you came by.
Thank you so much.